Shalom, welcome to SJTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to Refuah Shlema, a complete recovery for Malka Bat Simcha, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Vanser, Harav Nir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Bari Hoffman, and Ruven Hoffman. Before we get to our questions from our great JTFers, I have two announcements to make. One is a brief announcement, and the other one is going to be a subject that, for me personally, is very important, involving my mother. But first, as far as SJTF is concerned, next week is the holiday of Shavuot. And so because of the holiday of Shavuot, we have actually Shabbat, and then the holiday of Shavuot begins right after that and continues until Monday night. So we've got 3 days, basically, where we're disconnected from the internet for 3 whole days, from sundown on Friday until sundown on Monday. And so because of that, we're not going to be doing next week's SJTF. Next week's SJTF will not be done because of the holiday of Shavuot, but we will return to our regular SJTF schedule, Bezrat Hashem, God willing, the week afterwards. Just this next week, there will be no SJTF, but the week afterwards, we will return, God willing, to our regular JTF schedule. And now I have an announcement, a sad announcement to make about my mother. My mother is 82 years old. And my mother, unfortunately, several months ago, noticed that she had a large tumor on her arm. In just one month, a 9-centimeter tumor grew on her arm, and the tumor was cancerous. And the type of cancer that my mother has is indeed an aggressive cancer. The actual name of the cancer is myxofibrosarcoma. It's a soft tissue cancer, a soft tissue sarcoma. The soft tissue is what is under the skin, immediately under the skin. And about 15,000 people in the United States develop soft tissue cancers every year. And my mother developed this particular type of soft tissue cancer. Now, my mother went to a hospital. It was surgically removed. The cancer was removed. The fact that it grew so quickly in 1 month to 9 centimeters, that's extremely aggressive. That's unusual. Usually, a tumor takes years to grow. And in 1 month, all of a sudden, a 9-centimeter tumor develops on her arm. So that wasn't a good sign. She had it removed, and that was a little bit over 2 months ago. We went to see a doctor last week, and it appears she's going to be getting further testing, but it seems almost certain, 99.9% certain, that, God forbid, it seems that the tumor has reappeared only 2 months after being removed, that she has what's called a local recurrence, which means that the cancer once again has recurred in the same basic area where the original cancer developed. For cancer to come back in just 2 months, and for another major tumor to appear in just 2 months, is very, very aggressive. And myxofibrosarcoma is that type of aggressive cancer. It is a cancer where about 2/3 of the people who get it have a recurrence. God willing, we don't want to see it metastasize. Metastasize means that it spreads, usually through the bloodstream, it spreads to the other organs. And once it starts spreading all over the body, then the vast majority of people don't survive when that happens. God forbid. We hope that doesn't happen to my mother. But in any event, my mother now will be undergoing radiation. I don't want her to do chemotherapy because studies show that for this type of cancer, chemotherapy isn't effective anyway. And chemotherapy is much worse than radiation. Chemotherapy is brutal on the body. I don't know if it's effective in other types of cancers, but for this type of cancer, studies show it isn't very effective, so I would oppose her undergoing that. But radiation can be used to prevent recurrence, and in a case like this, we have no choice. We've got to use the radiation because this is growing aggressively and rapidly and coming back so fast, and if we don't stop it now, there won't be any hope of saving my mother, God forbid. So we must use radiation. So my mother's going to undergo some very unpleasant very unpleasant treatments. It's going to be a very rough time for her. Remember, bear in mind, this is an 82-year-old woman. My mother has been through a lot in life. But before I get to all that she's been, or at least a lot of what she's been through and the whole story, I want you to know that the reason I'm bringing this up, the reason I want you to know about this is because we need your prayers. Please pray for Malka Bat Simcha. Simcha was my grandmother. Malka Bat Simcha. Please pray for her refuah shlema, for her full recovery. She needs your prayers very badly now. The fact that she had such an aggressive cancer grow so quickly, and the fact that it came back only 2 months later, that's a very difficult situation, a very difficult diagnosis, and we need your prayers to save her right now, to save her life. There is one little possible ray of sunshine through all this, ray of hope through this. This type of cancer, the prognosis, meaning the future, the forecast for the future for this type of cancer, the prognosis of survival for this cancer tends to be higher than for some other type of soft tissue sarcomas if it's treated properly. Unfortunately, my mother's was not treated in the best way possible. She went to a terrible hospital, Forest Hills Hospital in Queens, which is a terrible hospital, a third world banana republic jungle run by morons, incompetent doctors, terrible hospital. And she went through hell in that hospital. We had to put her there because we had no choice. We had to operate quickly. And the better hospitals like Sloan Kettering, Mount Sinai, what are some better hospitals? All the better cancer hospitals. And of course, the out-of-town hospitals like Mayo Clinic. All the really good cancer hospitals said, well, there's a waiting list. You got to wait. You know, you got to wait at least weeks and maybe months. And she couldn't afford to wait because this thing was growing so quickly. Now she's not going to that same terrible hospital. She's going to a better hospital now. Thank God. And we hope to get this done more quickly. I hope we'll be able to get this done more quickly. But unfortunately, she went through a very, very difficult experience with this so far. I want to tell you a few things about my mother. My mother is Sfaradiya, meaning that she comes from a Sephardic Jewish background. You know that our family comes from different countries, Egypt, Morocco, different countries that Jews fled to after the Spanish Inquisition. Originally, my family's from Spain. But at the end of the 15th century, 1492, the Jews had to leave Spain because the Catholic Church ordered all Jews to convert to Catholicism, and any Jew who refused to was burned at the stake, were literally burned alive. Jews were tortured, men, women, and children, babies, tortured, brutally murdered in acts of barbarism that were comparable to what you see today with the Islamic State. What the Islamic State terrorists are doing, that is what the Catholic Inquisition was like against the Jews in Spain. And so the Jews were brutally murdered, and most of the Jews fled Spain. What they did is they fled. And so my family fled to various countries, to Morocco, to Egypt, to Turkey, to Greece, to various countries to get out of Spain and to be able to continue to live as Jews. Now, my mother's family, my mother, my grandmother, my grandfather on my mother's side came to the United States many years ago, almost 100 years ago. My mother was born in the United States. She was born here. And she had a very difficult life. I mean, when she was 16 years old, her older brother, who was 20, died in a car accident. So she lost a 20-year-old brother. And she had many, many other hard knocks on the way. I'm not going to give you all the details, but she had a very rough life. Trust me when I tell you. I'll just tell you some of what you already know about her life with her son. Her son, as you know, was involved, meaning me. I was involved with the Jewish Defense League and Rabbi Meir Kahana and our campaign to save Soviet Jewry. And so I went to prison for 5.5 years. And that was a very rough time on her. She didn't know exactly how long I'd be in prison. I was facing a much longer sentence. But I ended up doing 5.5 years in prison. 12 years on probation afterwards. And then when I tried to go to Israel, I was expelled. I've been expelled from Israel since 1996. Since I completed all those sentences since 1996, I've been trying to get into Israel. I've been expelled. Throughout that time, no one has more loyally fought for me and done everything, devoted her whole life to helping me, than my mother. During the 5.5 years I was in prison, when I was literally starving to death, there were points when I was starving to death, because if they didn't give me kosher food, I was refusing to eat. During that very difficult period, my mother, we didn't have cell phones in those days, and this is late 80s, early 90s, we didn't have cell phones in those days. My mother literally stayed by the phone sometimes 24 hours a day, waiting for calls from senators and congressmen and others that she was trying to use to save me and protect me and get me kosher food and also to get me out of prison. Because the way I was being treated, it was, you know, there was a real question about whether or not I was going to survive. I lost a tremendous amount of weight. I'm very thin as it is, and I lost a tremendous amount of weight, and I got very sick when I was in prison. And there was a real question mark as to whether or not I was going to survive. 5 times I was taken out of the prison system and taken to local hospitals. 5 times, because I was so sick, I had to go to local hospitals. So we didn't know if I was going to get out alive because of the constant kosher food problems. And so my mother went through a living hell during that 5.5 year period. Terrible, terrible time she went through. There was one point where I was put in the hole means solitary confinement, for 9 months. And the hole in these prisons is real hell, unbelievable hell. I don't know if I should use the word many, but a certain percentage of prisoners commit suicide. The percentage of prisoners who commit suicide in solitary confinement is much higher than the percentage of prisoners in general. And I remember the first week that I went into the hole, the first week that I went into solitary confinement, there was a Vietnamese prisoner across from me. He was a Vietnamese-American. And he had an argument with his girlfriend. He was in his early 20s. And he and his girlfriend had an argument. And he was in love with this girl. And the guards, the black guards in this prison, said that the girl called to say she's breaking up with him and met someone else. They were just teasing him. And they convinced him that she called. They made the whole thing up. But they just convinced him that she called and that she broke up with him and that she found someone else. Another Vietnamese guy who had more money. And he really believed them. They were just doing this to tease him, to be cruel. And he really believed them. And I told him, I said, oh, don't believe them. I was saying, don't believe them. But he believed them. He thought this was true. The next morning, he was found hanging. He hanged himself. He committed suicide. And he had been in solitary confinement only 4 or 5 days. There were many cases of prisoners committing suicide. There are many cases of prisoners committing suicide in solitary confinement because the conditions are so horrific. And I'm not saying, by the way, I'm not saying there isn't a need for solitary confinement. There is a need for it. But in any federal system, you know that sometimes people who don't deserve to be put there, I was put there just because I was asking for kosher food, which is something that under the law they were required to give me. They give the Muslims automatically, give them their halal and all their other. I just wanted peanut butter. I said, give me a peanut butter sandwich. Give me anything that's kosher. I'll eat fruits and vegetables. I'll live on salad. Just feed me. But I can't eat the non-kosher food. And they refused. They refused. They, you know, so I went through quite a struggle for 5.5 years. And it's a miracle that I got out alive. It really is a miracle. And they sent me all around from prison to prison on what they call diesel therapy. They sent me on the bus ride all around from one prison to another to punish me and to give me a hard time. And again, at one point, they kept me in prison for 9 whole months. My mother, throughout this time, was my contact to the outside world. And she fought for me day and night. She gave up her whole life for 5.5 years. She didn't do anything else. All she did was fight for her son for 5.5 years. She dropped everything else. She quit her job. She worked on Wall Street. And she quit her job and stopped doing everything else she was doing and fought all day, all week long for her son. And because of her, thanks to her, I got out of prison alive, because she went to senators and congressmen and leaders of organizations and all over the place nonstop. And because of her nonstop involvement, thanks to her and my sister, thanks to those two wonderful women in my life, I got out alive. They saved me. They saved my life. But that's just one chapter in my mother's life. She had a lot of rough knocks. She always has been involved in trying to do good things for people. Always an idealist. Always an activist. A very brave woman. Very, very brave. And she said to me, you know, I don't know if I'm going to make it with the cancer. I don't know. But I was hoping that at least I would live to see you, meaning me, at least I would live to see you finally fulfill your dream of making Aliyah, getting married, having children. At least I was hoping I'd live to see you do that. And I don't know, whatever Hashem wants, we have to accept Hashem's fate, she said to me. So we now are fighting to save my mother's life, because I want to give her that chance to someday see me make Aliyah, to someday give her grandchildren, to someday show that we can again do great things for the Jewish people. My mother did see me accomplish, together with our great leader, Rabbi Meir Kahana, something very important in our fight for Soviet Jews. She saw us fight to liberate and successfully liberate over 1 million Soviet Jews. She saw that happen. But she wanted to see, she also wanted to see me make Aliyah and do other things in life that are very important to her. I hope she'll be given that chance. She's the most loyal person you could ever meet. She's the kindest person and the most generous person you could ever meet, and the bravest person you could ever meet. And so, as a personal request, I'm here to ask my fellow JTFers to please pray for a refuah shlema, a complete recovery, for Malka Bat Simcha, my mother. And let's hope that the radiation stops the aggressive growth and she doesn't have any more recurrences. And also, please, don't only pray for her to survive and get well. Let's pray for her also not to suffer. Not to suffer very much, because she suffered a lot, both physically and in other ways throughout her life. She's already suffered quite a bit. She's been through a lot. What I told you is just the tip of the iceberg. So I don't want to see her suffer. I don't want to see her go through terrible, excruciating pain. As you know, cancer not only kills, but it's very, very painful. It's a very painful, God forbid, it can be a very painful death, God forbid. So please, let's pray for her, number one, to survive and be fully cured, have a refuah shlema, complete recovery, and that she shouldn't suffer. And that she should have a chance to see what we're trying to do in JTF, to see us succeed, to see our dreams come true, so that we can make this a better world, and so that we can finally have justice. We can finally see a measure of justice in this world. That's my request to my fellow JTFers. It's a personal request. And of course, I also, aside from your prayers that are very important, I also hope that you'll continue to help us during this time. I am distracted right now. You know, and this happened just as we were making contacts with important people. I can't tell you the details, but we're making contacts with important people, and I've had to cancel several meetings that I was going to have with important people to try to get our campaign going against Hillary Sodom Clinton and for Ted Cruz and all the other things we're trying to do for Israel, to save Israel from, God forbid, from the prospect of an Iranian nuclear holocaust, God forbid, because Ted Cruz in the White House may be our only shot, unless God intervenes miraculously, it may be our only shot at protecting Israel from this terrible threat. So we had some important meetings and unfortunately, I had to cancel them because this is very time consuming, and I am very distracted. Despite that, I am still going to try to do Hebrew and English videos. We still have to fight for the Jewish people and fight for Israel and fight to make this a better world. We still have to fight to prevent Hillary Clinton, God forbid, from becoming president. We still have to fight for these important things, and I'm going to be doing that even though I am distracted, because it's a very time-consuming thing fighting this type of cancer. I can't even go into all the details of all the things I've got to do. I'm fighting for her now the way she fought for me when I was in prison. I'm fighting to save her the way she saved me when my life was in danger. So when you see us put up Hebrew and English videos, please promote those videos everywhere, on Facebook, on YouTube, everywhere. Please pray for our success organizationally as well. And of course, join our JTF.org news page. We have such a great news page. The great Shlomo, our great administrator, has put together the best news page anywhere on the internet, JTF.org. Participate, comment, join us on that news page. Make that news page very active with your comments and your participation. And of course, if you can help us financially, obviously, the more support we get, the more we're going to be able to do in our campaign to wake the Jewish people up and to wake the world up. Obviously, the more support we get, the more people we can reach and the more effective we can be. So checks, money orders, cash donations made out to our post office box are very much needed and very much appreciated. God bless the great JTFers who are doing that. And naturally, of course, people who want to instead donate online can do it very conveniently with your credit card. It just takes several minutes. You go to the donate button. The donate button is on the Hebrew main page. The Hebrew main page is hayamin.org, and you go to the donate button. On top, it's in English, and in several minutes, you can very conveniently donate to the organization, to the cause. Remember again, next week, there's not going to be an Ask JTF program because of the holiday of Shavuot, but we continue with our regular Ask JTF schedule, God willing, after that. Now let's get to our questions from our great JTFers, and we start out with Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Were Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb decent role models when they were alive, or were they immoral people?" Unquote. I don't know anything about their personal morals. They certainly were much better role models than today's sports figures, obviously, than the rapists who play basketball and football and the other savages that we have in sports today. Obviously, they were much better role models than what we have today. But I have a question. Even if they were very good role models, even if they were wonderful people, Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb, and I don't know that much about them personally, but even if they were very good role models, should we be worshiping people? Should we be worshiping sports figures? Should we be worshiping people because they could hit a ball? I mean, is that something that's good for society? I know that started out in ancient Greece, and it's continued as part of the Western tradition. It's part of Western culture. But I wonder if that's really something that leads to good things. I know that it's American as apple pie, but I have to question whether or not we should be worshiping people just because they could hit a ball, or when it comes to soccer, kick a ball, or whatever else, whatever sport, it doesn't matter, whatever sport we're speaking about. Is that what's really important in our society? And I'm in favor of sports because it's healthy, because people should do exercise and it's healthy. And by the way, in regard to my mother and her health, I just want to say, almost no one in my mother's family lived to the age of 82, the age that she is now. Almost no one made it to that age. The reason that she's made it to this age, even though she's sick now, the reason that she made it to this age, I am convinced, is because of the healthy diet and exercise and the healthy living that we should be doing. Years ago, we didn't know. So I believe, I very much am a believer in healthy diet, in exercise. I believe playing sports is very good. I think if you play baseball, I think it's very healthy. I think it's a very good sport to play. But just sitting in front of your TV and watching it and eating pizza and drinking beer and screaming at the TV and betting and gambling and then worshiping the players based on whether or not they could hit the ball, I don't know. I have to question whether or not that really does build a healthy society. I'm not sure that it does. Just a question that I'm raising, and I know it's controversial what I'm saying. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And we go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, now that Mike Huckabee is in the race for president, will you also endorse him like you're endorsing Ted Cruz? Thanks, unquote. I like Mike Huckabee very much because he is a true friend of Israel. So I have a great deal of affection for Mike Huckabee, and I'd love to see him as president of the United States. I think he would be very good for Israel. Unfortunately, I don't like his positions on some other issues. I think as governor of Arkansas, he did some things that I don't agree with. Ted Cruz more accurately reflects my positions on the other issues, like taxes and immigration and other issues, even though Mike Huckabee now has moved to the right on those issues again. But when he was governor of Arkansas, his positions were troublesome. But he is so pro-Israel and so supportive of the Jewish people, I think America would be blessed by God if you had a president like that. Because God says that he'll bless those that bless Israel and curse those that curse Israel. And that's, there's no doubt that's true. So I would love to see Mike Huckabee as president. But I believe that he has no chance of winning. Zero chance of winning. I think the only candidate that has any real chance, or almost no chance, you know, miracles occur, but I would say almost no chance. Let me amend my original statement. I would say he has almost no chance of winning. Ted Cruz, though, I think does have a chance. And so, no, we're going to be supporting Ted Cruz, and we urge people to vote for Ted Cruz. Unfortunately, I'm sorry that Mike Huckabee is running, because Mike Huckabee takes votes away from Ted Cruz. He splits the evangelical Christian vote, he splits the pro-Israel vote, and he takes votes away from Ted Cruz. And I think that that's unfortunate. So, no, we're going to be supporting Ted Cruz. Thank you, Joe. And we go now to Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, evilest American Jew. Noam Chomsky, Arthur Schneier, Bobby Fischer, the Rosenbergs, or Nellie the Weasel, unquote. I would say it's probably a tie between Noam. They're so evil that I just can't pick one over the other. They're just so evil. Noam Chomsky, of course, works for the destruction of Israel, openly for the destruction of Israel, supports all the Muslim Nazi terrorists that want to exterminate the Jewish people. I mean, the sickest, most grotesque bacteria on the face of the earth. Arthur Schneier, another example of Semitic bacteria, or bacteria of Semitic extraction. This beast, together with his son Mark Schneier, they support all the enemies of the Jewish people, Jesse Jackson, David Dinkins, Barack Hussein Obama, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, you name it. Just pure evil. Arthur Schneier had JDL members arrested outside of his synagogue when they were protesting across the street from the Soviet Nazi mission to the UN. I mean, just an evil, miserable, rotten animal. Bobby Fischer, he was a Nazi. I mean, just a Nazi. I mean, he supported Nazism and was a Holocaust denier and attacked the Jewish people and said the Jews control the world and everything's a Jewish conspiracy. And this is a guy whose mother was Jewish. The Rosenbergs, those animals handed over America's atomic secrets to Stalinist Russia. Stalin! They were giving atomic secrets to Stalin. How could you get more evil than that? So, you know, you got so many bad things about these people. Elie the Weasel, he's a coward. He's disgusting. He condemns his fellow Jews. He's disgusting. I don't know if he's on the same level as the other ones I mentioned. The other ones I mentioned are so evil that it's just beyond the pale. I would take the first four, Noam Chomsky, Arthur Schneier, Bobby Fischer, and the Rosenbergs, and say it's a tie between all of them, that they're the most evil. And now Lewinsky Stinks writes, and I quote, compare Bette Midler and Barbara Streisand, unquote. Well, both of them are self-hating Jewesses. Both are singers, of course. Bette Midler, You know how she started her career? Performing at a homosexual bathhouse, which thankfully is now closed. But she actually performed at a bathhouse. She was performing at a homosexual bathhouse where perverted sodomites would go and commit abominable acts. And she was performing there while they're committing these abominable acts, and she'd be singing there for them. She was also an early leader, of course, in the fight to legitimize homosexuality. She founded an organization. She has a special organization that she founded, that's her organization, to revitalize black neighborhoods, black jungles that are destroyed by people who have no respect for law or for other human beings or even for their fellow blacks. And she wants to revitalize these neighborhoods, and that's what she raises money for. She does nothing to help her fellow Jews, of course. She's a self-hating Jew. She raises money for the enemies of her people and does everything that makes this world a more immoral place. Barbara Streisand, another one, completely immoral. She slept with everyone. She slept with everyone she could get her hands on. She dated the Canadian Prime Minister, Pierre Trudeau, who was a vicious Jew hater, enemy of Israel. She was dating him, and who knows what they were doing. You can imagine what they were doing. She dated him. She intermarried, of course, with James Brolin. I'm saying, of course. I assume not everybody knows about her life story. I hope not. I hope people don't waste their time following these empty vessels. But anyway, she married James. It's my job, unfortunately, to know about these people. But she intermarried with James Brolin. She dated and slept with everybody. She raised many millions of dollars for Bill and Hillary Clinton, Barack Hussein Obama, and every other Jew-hating politician under the sun. In other words, she's an enemy of her own people, like Bette Midler. That's the comparison. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, why are American Jews so quick to cry anti-Semitism when evil leftists like Schmuck Schumer, Lois Lerner, Pruneface, George Soros, etc. get attacked, but not about what happened to you, Jonathan Pollard, and Harav Zatzal, unquote. That's a fantastic question and a great point, Lewinsky Stinks, and you're always very perceptive, Lewinsky Stinks. You ask great questions and you're very perceptive. This is an example of what an upside-down world we have, what an insane world the Jewish world has become. American Jews, everything's upside down. They take the opposite position of what the proper position should be on almost every issue. They're on the opposite side of what sanity would require them to support. It's a world gone mad. The whole world is crazy, but the Jews are even more so. After 2,000 years of living without their homeland and all the complexes they have, they're so ashamed to be Jewish. They're so sensitive to anti-Semitism. They want so badly to be accepted. All these complexes and insecurities and crazy behaviors of theirs, it's really tragic. It's insane and it's tragic. But that's the reality. The world of American Jews is all upside down. They take the opposite positions of what they should on almost everything. And of course it's a disgrace, and of course it's both disgusting and sad. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And we go now to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, one, Hutton Gibson's the father of Mel Gibson. He's a Nazi. He's a Holocaust denier. He supports the vicious Nazi Jew-hating statements he's made about Jews controlling everything and everything being a Jewish conspiracy, and about how there could never have been a Holocaust. He's a Nazi. He's a Nazi, just like his son. And now Smash Islam asks about two, Bill Donahue. Well, this is the head of the anti-Semitic so-called Catholic League. What a Jew hater. This is a guy who defends Muslim terrorists in France. After they massacre people, he defends them. He says they're right. He says he understands them. This is a guy who says that Jews control Hollywood. So he makes the same anti-Semitic Hitlerian attacks, blaming the Jews for all the problems that he doesn't like. He never, you know, his group is called the Catholic League. There aren't a lot of Catholics in Hollywood? There aren't a lot of Catholics who own studios, who are directors and producers and actors. Are you kidding me? I mean, you got to be joking me. To him, it's all Jews. The whole problem is Jews. And he defends Nazi war criminals. As long as the Nazi war criminal is a Catholic, he'll defend the Nazi war criminal, the worst butchers in the world. And of course, the most notorious Catholic Nazi war criminal was Adolf Hitler himself. Adolf Hitler was a Catholic. And Bill Donahue, I don't think Bill Donahue has actually defended Hitler, but he has defended Nazi war criminals who were responsible for the murder of large numbers of Jews in the Nazi concentration camps and committing other horrific atrocities in the worst crimes against humanity in human history. And Bill Donahue is always there to defend them as long as they're Catholic. Now, I want to say here that we're not against Catholics in JTF. We have Catholic members who are very good members of our organization and our movement. We're not against all Catholics. But there are some people who use their religion for evil purposes. I mean, there are people who do things like that. And Bill Donahue is an example of that. Now, Smash Islam writes, 3. Jesse Ventura called for prosecution of Catholic Church for child sex abuse on Bill Meyer show. Okay. It doesn't surprise me. First of all, Jesse Ventura is a militant atheist, so it doesn't surprise me that he said that. I'm not happy about the fact that there indeed has been a lot of child sex abuse in the Catholic Church. That's a fact. Unfortunately, it's a fact. The Catholic Church itself acknowledges that thousands of priests engage in this type of behavior over the years. That's from the Catholic Church's own records. And that's a very, very serious situation. But I don't think Jesse Ventura would call for prosecution of the Muslims who openly commit child abuse and brag about it. At least the Catholic Church, at least they try to hide it, as evil as it is, and as horrible as it is, and as much as I think that these people should be punished and should never be allowed to see the light of day again because they're a danger to the most vulnerable people in our society, children. You know, to someone who preys on children, that should be the most severe punishment should be directed against someone like that because they're preying on people who can't defend themselves. But Jesse Ventura doesn't make similar statements in regard to the Muslims. Just an interesting example of the double standard here. Smash Islam now writes, 4. Smash Islam wants me to comment now on Dan Savage. Dan Savage, this is a sodomite who smears anyone who in any way disagrees with the full sodomite agenda. He promotes homosexuality on a massive scale. He's done all types of projects, and I don't even want to recite and repeat the projects he's been involved with, but some of them have gotten, tens of millions of people have seen some of the stuff that he's done through various social media and elsewhere, and so it's been very, very damaging. He also produces, in addition to trying to justify and legitimize and promote homosexuality, he also produces disgusting perverted pornography. He is a strong supporter of pornography. And of course, this is the great celebrated so-called gay activist. Supports pornography, supports smearing his opponents, supports the dirtiest tactics under the sun. That's gay activism. That's the type of sodomite world that these people want to promote. Absolutely grotesque. Thank you, Smash Islam. We go now to Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, 1. Bernie Sanders is a self-hating Jew. Should JTF root for him to win the Democrat nomination since he may be less electable in November than Hillary Sodom Clinton? Unquote. Oh, I would be happy if he did win the nomination, but unfortunately, Binyamin, he doesn't have a chance to win the nomination. He's not gonna win the nomination. We should root for people against Clinton, yes. I don't think anyone serious is running against her yet. We'll see. You know, we'll see what happens. But Bernie Sanders, in my opinion, does not have a realistic chance of winning the nomination. Now, let's say he doesn't have a chance of winning. Should we still root for him? Yeah, we should root for him because anything that damages Hillary Clinton or gives her a hard time, of course we should support. Of course we should root for it. Absolutely. Anything that creates problems or obstacles for Hillary Sodom Arafat is good. So Hillary Sodom Arafat is the number one threat to us right now politically. She is the favorite to win the presidency, not just the Democrat nomination, but the presidency in 2016. And so she is a tremendous threat to us. She's the number one threat to us politically. And so anything that hurts her or creates obstacles in her path to the presidency, God forbid, anything that creates obstacles to that is good. And we should root for that, even though I don't think Sanders can win. Benjamin now writes, too, was the Amtrak derailment in Philadelphia due to affirmative action, unquote. I don't know all the details. I know that they say rocks were being thrown at the train now. I don't know if that would be enough to actually cause the accident. And the train, of course, was speeding at 106 miles an hour, which is more than double the 50-mile-an-hour speed limit. And when it tried to make the turn, the curve, it was impossible. It went right over, and that was why the terrible accident occurred. Beyond that, I don't know who was involved, and I don't know what was involved, but one thing is clear. People are less safe because of affirmative action on trains, on planes, anywhere. Planes are actually safer than trains, but putting that aside for now, people are less safe on the roads when you drive your car because of affirmative action, because people who are not meant to live in a civilized society are allowed to get driver's licenses and are allowed to be train conductors and are allowed to do all these other things. Of course, we're all less safe because of that. And regulators are affirmative action people, and company executives are affirmative action people. They get the promotions, they get all the jobs, and they're completely unqualified. And that does put everybody in danger. Whether or not that specifically came about directly in this case, that I don't know the answer to, but I know in general, affirmative action makes all of us much less safe. That is for sure. Thank you, Benjamin. And we go now to Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, Jorge Mario Bergoglio is an anti-Semite. Unquote. Well, I agree with you, and Chicago Jew here is referring to the Pope. You know, the Pope just met with Mahmoud Abbas Abu Mazen, who together with Yasser Arafat murdered thousands of Jews and murdered hundreds of thousands of his fellow Arabs in the Lebanese Civil War. I mean, just responsible since the 1950s for huge massacres and slaughters of people, horrific crimes against humanity, the worst type of terrorist mass murderer. And this beast, the head of the Fatah terrorist organization, meets with the Pope, and the Pope called him an angel of peace. An angel of peace! This is someone who openly calls for the destruction of Israel. This is someone who has the blood of so many innocent people on his hands, a Nazi monster, and he calls him the angel of peace. Because this Pope wants to destroy Israel. This is an anti-Semitic Pope, a left-wing anti-Semitic Pope. The Vatican now says that they're going to recognize an independent Palestine. Of course, there is no Palestine. There are no Palestinians. There never was. It's a complete lie and a bluff and a myth and a hoax. But this same Vatican from 1948, when the State of Israel was created, until the mid-1990s, refused to recognize Israel. Wouldn't recognize Israel. The same Vatican that recognized diplomatically Nazi Germany up until the last day of the war in 1945. Even when the Vatican had been liberated in 1943 already by the Allied forces, the Allied armies came in, the Vatican could easily have broken diplomatic relations with Nazi Germany in 1943. The next 2 years, when they were surrounded by Allied armies and there was no excuse, they continued to have diplomatic relations and continued to give legitimacy to Nazi Germany right up until the last day of the war in 1945. And now they're recognizing another Nazi pseudo-country, the so-called Palestine that they want to create, because they want Israel to be destroyed. And especially this left-wing Pope, he especially is an anti-Semite. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we go now to Righteous Sword 007, who writes, and I quote, some say that if the Kahanists take power in Israel, there will be religious police. What are your plans to enforce religious laws, unquote? No, actually, the Kahanist movement has no intention of forcing people to observe the mitzvot, to observe the commandments in the Torah. That's just not true. What we do want is to give Jewish kids a Jewish education. Jewish kids, when they go to school, they should learn about the Torah, about the Talmud. That should be part of their religious curriculum, along with science and math and computers and all the other things you got to learn. They also should learn about the Torah but not from teachers that are anti-religious. Right now they have Bible study sometimes in school from anti-religious Bolshevik teachers who make fun of the Bible. We want Jewish kids, every Jewish kid in Israel, just as he has to know about math and science and literature and computers and all these other subjects they take, he has to know about those things, absolutely should learn all of those things. He also should know and learn Torah and Tanakh. Tanakh is Bible. Torah is the first five books of the Bible. Talmud, he should learn about Judaism. He should know what Judaism says. We're not going to force anybody. We don't force anybody to observe the commandments in the Bible, but we are going to say that part of the curriculum in every school where there are Jewish kids, part of the curriculum should be learning Judaism from a religious Jewish teacher who believes in Judaism. That is something that we will introduce. And if we do that, I guarantee you that within 10 years, the majority of Israeli Jews will be religious. We won't have to enforce any religious laws. The people of Israel will want a religious state. We won't have to have any religious police. Thank you, Righteous Sword. We go now to Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, "One, who were the Sternists and Irgun? What did they do?" Unquote. The Sternists and the Irgun, in Hebrew, Etzel and Lehi. Lehi are the Sternists, the organization formed by Avraham Stern, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, may the memory of the saint be immortalized, and the Irgun, Etzel is the Irgun Tzvayi, HaIrgun HaTzvayi HaLeumi, Irgun Tzvayi Leumi is Etzel, which was headed by David Raziel and afterwards by Menachem Begin. These were two heroic Jewish underground organizations that fought to get the British out of the land of Israel. The British did not want to leave, and then they wanted to create an Arab state in the land of Israel instead of a Jewish state, so they had to be removed. The only way to create a Jewish state was to force them out, push them out. And the Sternists and the Irgunists heroically fought against them. There were only 1,000 underground members at one point, fighting against 100,000 British soldiers. There were 100,000 British soldiers in the land of Israel. And 1,000 underground Jewish freedom fighters threw them out of the land of Israel. It was one of the most incredible, heroic, miraculous battles. Absolutely incredible. And people today don't even know the incredible stories of valor and fighting against all odds and incredible victories and the nobility of these freedom fighters. And you had Jewish teenagers who went to the gallows, who were hanged by the British, and calmly went to the gallows, walked up to the gallows and sang Hatikva, sang the Jewish national anthem, and then were hanged, fighting and dying for their people, willingly dying for their people. I mean, the bravery, the incredible brilliance of what they did and the miraculous nature of their victory. This is something that, again, if we were in power, every Jewish kid would learn about this and every Jewish soldier would learn about this. Dr. Dan now writes, what are their differences? I think the Stern group was, and which he also writes, which do you identify with the most? I would identify more with the Sternists, because Avraham Stern was a religious Jew and was really a Jewish saint. There were others. He worked with people who were not saints, like Yitzhak Shamir, but anyway, he himself was a religious Jew, and I thought the Sternists better represented the proper ideology. Menachem Begin headed the Irgun. I'm not taking away from Begin. When he was in the Irgun, he was a hero. As prime minister, he was terrible, and Yitzhak Shamir was terrible as prime minister, but when they were in the underground, they were heroes. At that time, they were heroes. How they eventually became terrible when they became prime minister and gave in to pressure, that's another story. That's very unfortunate, but in the underground, they were heroes. But I would identify more with the Sternists. And the big difference, some of the differences were that the Sternists did take a stronger line against the British and fighting the British than the Irgunists. They were even more aggressive in terms of what they thought should be done to the British, even though they were a much smaller movement. They were a smaller underground movement than the Irgun. So they were actually able to do less. The Sternists actually did less because they were a much smaller group. But their policies ideologically were much more militant against the British, and I agree more with their policies than with the Irgun policies. Dr. Dana writes, too, how should the poor be treated, unquote. We have to help the poor. We have to give charity to the poor. And the best way to help the poor is to teach them how not to be poor. To get them jobs, offer them job opportunities, offer them skills, and enable them to pick themselves up out of poverty. That's the best thing you can do for a poor person. Of course, if someone's poor and they're starving, you have to feed them. You can't say, okay, now I want you to pick yourself up by your bootstraps and make it on your own. You can't do that if someone's starving. When they're starving, first you have to feed them. So if it's a desperate situation and they need food and they're really in dire straits, we should help them. But that should be very temporary and just the minimum that's needed, because we want to get them on their own feet. We want them supporting themselves. We don't want them to be charity cases. We want them to have their own jobs and the dignity of work and be able to get their own paychecks with their own homes and raise their own families and have all the other good things in life that everybody should aspire to have. Thank you, Dr. Dan. We now go to Rashi, who is new, who I think is new on the forum. Welcome to the forum, Rashi. Rashi writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, being that you support Ted Cruz, how do you feel about his hiring Saul Anuzis? That was sourced by Debbie Schlussel. Yeah, Saul Anuzis was the Republican Party chairman in Michigan, and he unfortunately did have relationships with Arab Nazis who call themselves Republicans in Dearborn, and he tried to suck up to all the Arab Muslim Nazi filth in Dearborn. So he's a bad guy. He's not a good guy, no question about it. Look, Ted Cruz is not the ideal perfect candidate, and we're not going to get an ideal or perfect candidate. And he will deal sometimes with bad people in trying to win the presidency. Winning the presidency is not easy. So he's going to deal with some bad people. That's for sure. And this is an example of that. I think he picked this guy because he certainly doesn't agree with Saul Anuzis in terms of dealing with Arab Muslim Nazis. I mean, Ted Cruz is very, very, I believe he's very genuine about about being pro-Israel and about supporting the Jewish people. I believe he's sincere. But he's willing to deal with this guy because he wants to win the Michigan primary, which is early in the primary season. It's an important primary. And Saul Anuzis was the chairman of the Republican Party in Michigan. He's an important Republican personality, a prominent Republican. And getting him to run Ted Cruz's campaign in Michigan is something that Ted Cruz feels is necessary to try to win the primary there. I'm not happy about it. I'm not happy when you deal with anti-Semites like this. But it doesn't change the fact that I still believe Ted Cruz is sincerely pro-Israel. I think he's willing to deal with bad people sometimes in order to get elected, as politicians often do. But I still think he's sincere, and I don't think that Saul Anuzis is going to be affecting Ted Cruz's positions on Israel or on the Jewish people or on Iran. The number one thing, Ted Cruz is really good on the issue of Iran, which is the number one threat to Israel's survival right now. And by the way, I don't know that he hired Saul Anuzis. I don't think it's a paid position. I think he just made him the chairman of the Ted Cruz campaign in Michigan. I don't think he actually is giving him any money. But still, no question, we should keep our eye on things like this. And it's good that this comes out. But I still think Ted Cruz is the best bet for us if we want to stop a nuclear Iran. And that's my number one goal. Stopping a nuclear Iran is the number one threat that we face right now for Israel and for America, and Ted Cruz has taken the best position on that issue, and in my opinion, the most sincere position. Thank you, Rashi. We go now to Mr. VSS, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, please educate, inform, and enlighten about former British Prime Minister Benjamin Disraeli. Okay, Benjamin Disraeli, I guess you would pronounce it, I don't know how you pronounce it with the British accent. He did become Prime Minister of England. In, let's see, how long ago was that? That was, I think it was about, I think it was in the 1880s. So we're talking at about 130 years ago, 140 years ago. First of all, in order to do that, his father renounced Judaism and converted his family to the Anglican Church. He baptized his children and converted them. And that was the only way that Benjamin Disraeli could run, even for the British Parliament. Jews were not allowed to serve in the Parliament 130, 140 years ago. You swear your allegiance to the Christian faith, and you weren't allowed to. If you're a Jew, you weren't allowed to serve. Which I have no problem with, by the way. I agree. I don't want to see Jews serving. I think the Jewish politicians are all traitors. So I have no problem with that. But anyway, because his father renounced Judaism and he became an Anglican, he was able to run, and eventually he did become Prime Minister. He came from a Sephardic background. His family was originally from Italy. And he became the head of the Conservative Party in Britain, and became a pretty famous Conservative Party Prime Minister. He actually served twice as Prime Minister and left quite a mark on British policy there. I don't like, as you know, I don't like Jews that abandon the Jewish faith and go to other religions. For me, that's betraying the Jewish faith and the Jewish people. So this type of thing doesn't please me. And there wasn't a state of Israel at that time. If there had been, you know, I think this guy would have done the usual Jewish thing of bending over backwards, you know, to show how loyal he is to Britain and how he's disloyal to his own people, so that they wouldn't accuse him of being loyal, have dual loyalty to the Jewish people. When Jews get into these political situations, it's a disaster for the Jewish people. It's a disaster. And that's why we are completely against these Jewish politicians. Thank you, Mr. VSS. We go now to EB22, who writes, and I quote, please discuss, one, Daniel Kurtzner, former ambassador and Barack Hussein Obama advisor. Daniel Kurtzner is the scum of the earth. In fact, I have to apologize to scum. When I make the comparison, it's actually an insult to scum to compare Daniel Kurtzner to scum. He is so vile. He was the ambassador to Israel. He was the ambassador to Egypt. He's a so-called Orthodox Jew. This is a so-called Orthodox Jew, wears a kippah, claims to be Orthodox, wants to eat kosher food in the embassy. They had to bring kosher food to him. And he was telling Obama the whole time, pressure Israel, stop them, they're building settlements, stop it. He would go around spying, together with Peace Now in Israel, when he was ambassador to Israel, he'd go around spying. And if he saw even one little home being built in Judea and Samaria, he would run to the White House and run all over the place, screaming and yelling and complaining and demanding that the home be destroyed, and that Jews not be allowed to live anywhere in their historic homeland, or even in Jerusalem. That's how low this informer, this rat, this vile Euro-Nazi really is. And he is what we would call a Euro-Nazi. I mean, this was a Judenrat, capo, low-life Jewish anti-Semite of the worst type. Of the worst type. You can't get more vile than this. And he calls himself an Orthodox Jew and does everything he can to hurt Israel. Everything he can. Just the lowest of the low. And a graduate of Yeshiva University, no surprise, which is a horrible place that produces a lot of traitors. And now EB asks about Yehuda Kurtzner, president of the Shalom Hartman Institute of North America, unquote. Oh, another animal. Another traitor. This is the guy who says he has a pluralistic... It's a pluralistic, religious plural. They favor religious pluralism. They're a pluralistic organization. In other words, the deformed, the conserved, the assimilated, the intermarried, the gays, everything evil, because we have to be pluralistic. We have to have diversity. If the Kahanists say, well, what about letting us run for the Knesset? What about giving us the right to be part of your diversity? And, you know, Kahanists also represent a segment of the Jewish people. Shouldn't we also be allowed to express our views and to be part of all of this? No. No. The Kahanists, they'll ban. But in the name of religious pluralism, every left-wing abomination, every left-wing insect is glorified. That's what this so-called institute is all about. Support every anti-Torah piece of garbage, and they call it pluralism. By the way, some of the things they're promoting, they have organizations and projects supporting Islamic art. Islamic art? What is Islamic art? Cutting people's heads off? What art? Showing a picture of Mohammed when he was in his 50s, marrying a six-year-old girl, is that Islamic art? Or raping Jewish women, is that Islamic art? What art? Or Islamic education, he has an Islamic education project. Islamic education, Islamic art, the beauty of Islam, that's the things that they promote. And they're so interested in pluralism and democracy and for everybody, except people on the right. People on the right should be banned and silenced and put in prison for daring to even, for expressing their opinions. That's Yehuda Kurtzner, that's the so-called Shalom Hartman Institute. Yimach Shemam v'zichram to all, and I say that to all informers and traitors and backstabbers that want to hurt good Jews. I do say that to anyone. I curse people who want to hurt the good Jews. If you want to hurt the good Jews and you deliberately, maliciously work to hurt good Jews, everything you want to do to them should happen to you instead. And that goes for Yehuda Kurtzner, and that goes for Daniel Kurtzner. Yimach Shemam v'zichram. Thank you, E.B., and again, I want to thank everybody for another program. And remember, again, next week, there will not be SJTF because of the Shavuot holiday, but we return to our regular schedule the following week, right after that. Until 2 weeks from now, Shalom.